for this. So from that discussion, we brainstorm a few ideas, and then we actually go online and see if the solution is already out there. And we figure that even for big guys like Salesforce, SAP, and all this, they are not doing things that the ideas that we talk about. So that's how it all got started.
Okay. So, and because of that, so can I conclude that it was because your clients that you do the advertisement for them, generate the leads for them, you work really hard for them, and then at the end they just tell you that, oh, the leads is not good. And then when you ask them more questions, they just can't answer you properly. And that makes you, does that make you really angry about?
Yeah, it is. That's why we were complaining about the situation for about a year, and every time we talk about it, we get furious. We are like, it's not fair. It's like we are working so hard to generate all the leads, but to them, they just throw it back to us, and no tracking whatsoever.
Right, right. So there's no such thing like this out there. I mean, like what Sales Candy does, right?
Yeah. The more we run into, I mean, that idea was conceptualized in October last year.
Okay.
Barely 13 months into it. We figured that the more we develop this and the more we roll it out and get the feedback from the market and clients, what we find out that we are actually tackling a very interesting part of the CRM. So we are tackling at the very front end where all the leads happen and the routing. So most of the CRM tackle different journey of that lead. So we are at the very front line, and there's not much solution. In fact, we haven't seen any solution out there that route leads instantly like us, and within 45 seconds, if it's not being picked up by any of the salesperson, by the salesperson, it will actually reroute to another salesperson to ensure that the call actually being made within 5 minutes from the lead submission. And from the clients that have adopted Sales Candy and use it, we do see from the reports, we actually see calls being made within first 5 minutes, and a lot of them.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'll drill into that a little bit more afterwards, but let's talk about, go back to slightly the earlier stage. So after the idea is conceived over the coffee chat, and then you know, after all that discussion, what was the subsequent steps that you all have taken?
I think one of the things that I've been running business for about 15 years now, with all these different businesses, different partners and everything. So I figured that for this business, I want to run it differently, probably just to stretch myself, to challenge myself, and probably just for a good stretch. So the first thing we did, how I would have done it, probably I would have developed the whole thing, spent 6 months, 3 months into it, and probably a couple hundred thousand into it, and then start selling. But this round we say, why don't we do it differently? If this is a real pain point, which we identify, why don't we start selling? Why don't we just build a PowerPoint, put some mock-up images of how the app should look like, the flow, and then start talking to clients? And that's exactly what we did. We talked to our property developer clients with just a PowerPoint. I think it's about 10 to 15 slides on it.
Did it take a very long time to create those slides, or was it very costly to do that?
In my agency, I have a designer, so I managed to get him or arm-twist him to do it for me.
Okay.
So we actually get the screens done in probably about 2 weeks now. 1-2 weeks time, refined it a few times.
Right.
Then we actually pitch it to one of our clients already.
So from the day that you and your co-founder decided to do this, then you spent 2-3 weeks to create the slides and stuff, refine it, mm-hmm. and then you talked to the client.
Yeah. So I wrote down some major timeline and milestone because I want to share the journey with students as well. So I noted this down. The idea was conceived October 4th over lunch. And our first pitch to our clients is actually October 26th, 22 days later.
22 days later. Wow. All right. Then?
The first client didn't... They liked the idea. And the head of digital loved it. And they actually scheduled us to meet up with the higher...
Management.
Including one of the family members of the owners. And we have the second pitch. But at the end, they didn't sign up.
All right.
Yeah, they didn't sign up with us the first pitch.
So the first pitch, no, they didn't sign up. Do you know why? I mean, do you have any clue?
Well, our speculation is they do have a CRM. They did invest in CRM development internally, which was not working, and everyone know that. But Probably, we are speculating that was the reason that they didn't go with us.
Because if they go with you, then they are just saying that they made a mistake in the previous investment, right?
Probably, or probably someone would need to be the scapegoat. I'm not sure what would happen. But and of course, that's our own speculation.
So after that, do you continue to go to the second and third client?
Yes, after that, we also talked to a few more, because we do have a few property developers that we are handling the ads for. So we did talk to them, and the second one, actually, even from the first pitch, even though they didn't subscribe, but they loved the idea.
Okay.
So from that alone, it was a very good feedback. So we actually proceed to pitch it further, and verbally, we actually get a go-ahead from our second pitch, to the second developers.
So second pitch, you got a yes from them.
Yes.
And I'm very curious, before you even went for the first pitch, were you not afraid or... do you have not this little voice that will tell you like, hey, you don't actually have a product and you go and pitch? I mean, do you feel like, you know, you're lacking of the product? Do you feel afraid or do you feel less confident? I mean, did any of these things run across your mind initially?
The little voice is there, but not so much on we don't have a product, so we can't pitch, because for us, we are blessed in the sense that we have these clients that we can access to, and we already have a relationship. So it was not that hard to pitch to them. But the little voice was telling us, can this be done? Can this be done in certain time frame?
That and you're going to promise to clients?
Yeah, because basically what we are asking for is we are asking for them to sign up as an early adopter. As in, you put money in, you wait 4 months, we deliver the product. So of course... I'm one of the person that if I take the money, I don't make sure I get it done. It's not like I take the money and hopefully it can be delivered. So those little voice is more on that, like, can we really deliver?
Not so much on whether they will say yes to you or not.
I think that is there,
but not as much. So you were quite confident in a way. Can I say that?
Okay. Probably let's backtrack a bit. Let's take a look. We don't have much to lose. All right. I lost 20 PowerPoint slides, so what? So even if they say no, okay, it's a no, then
you just move on.
Yeah. So for me, probably the sunk-in cost is not that huge. So even probably, I'm not too sure if they will sign up, but even if they don't, what do they have to lose?
Okay, that's good. So when you went and pitched to the second one and they say yes to you, right? I mean, is it possible for you to maybe shed some light on what did you ask for and like how long you tell them that they have to wait for it? I mean,
yes. So we asked for
is it a six-figure kind of thing?
Okay. So roughly we need about because right after the first pitch, the second thing we did was actually to talk to I was a programmer.
Okay.
But I haven't been programming for 15 years, and I know that it's not something I want to get into. Even if I start out a new company, there's more important thing for me to focus on.
Right.
So I already know upfront I want to outsource this. So right after the first pitch, we start talking to software developers. In fact, we met up with about 8 or 9 of them from 5 different countries.
Okay.
So we basically those interviews give us a sense of the feasibility and the rough cost and the timeline. So from there, we use that information, and internally, I know that my first MVP, minimal viable product, could have been done in 3 months if I get the right team. So I add a month of buffer. So when I pitch to them, I tell them, okay, this is the amount I need, which is probably about one third to one half of the actual cost of development. So our idea was we get 3 sign up and we can fund the whole
the whole
development cost.
So you need 3 clients. Mm-hmm. To pay you the amount that you're targeting,
exactly.
To be able to cover the costs of the development.
Exactly.
And you think that you can get it done in 3 months, but you add 1 more month for buffer.
Yes.
So therefore you tell client 4 months.
Exactly.
At this X amount of money.
Yep.
And is that money considered generally as reasonably high or average?
The amount we are looking at is probably about $20,000-$30,000 for the client to sign up and pay us in advance and wait 4 months.
Okay, I mean, just to put in perspective, right, in ringgit that is about 100 over 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Which generally, if you ask me, is not low, not extremely high, but it's definitely something that even big companies would probably need to think a little bit, because 100 over grand for 4 months of waiting,
don't know what you'll get.
It's and I think it's not something commonly heard in you know. So all right, and so after you got the second one and you got a yes immediately, mm-hmm. and what happened after that? Do you continue pitching or?
Okay, so you mean the first one right from the second pitch?
Yeah, the first pitch you got a no. Second pitch you got a yes.
And so what happened? There was a few challenges right there and then. So first challenge was they want to bring the legal team in because it involved about 100k ringgit.
Okay.
So they need to make sure that they are protected. So
wow.
I mean, yeah. Which I mean, of course, corporate.
Correct. I think it's fair. I think it's fair. Yes.
But since legal team is involved, that means we had 2-3 months on top just for the legal process.
Wow.
Agreement bounced back and forth. So that is the first challenge. Then the second challenge, of course, like just now we mentioned, we need 2 to 3 clients, right?
Correct.
So now we get the first client, and the clock start ticking. So we need to secure
the other 2 clients quickly as soon as possible.
Yeah. So these are the challenges that we face, and of course, and back then, we also committed. Even if we didn't secure the second and third, we would actually bootstrap the rest of the development cost.
All right.
Yeah. So those were the challenges.
So the other 2 did they came in eventually very quickly?
Yeah, I think the second and third. The second one we actually signed up. The first one after all the dilly-dally of the legal process, we actually signed the agreement on February 28th.
Okay.
So that was the official sign off of the first client. The
All
second
right.
one was on board in March, and then the third one is actually May.
February, end of February, and then March,
and then May.
And then May.
Yeah.
But the clock start ticking in February.
The clock start ticking in April. Why? Because in the agreement, I clearly state that my 4 months is from payment in. Because they are early adopter, they're supposed to fund the project, not me.
So they agree to. That you know the money in, then the clock start ticking.
Yes. So agreements clearly state 4 months start from payment fully in.
So the payment came in on April.
April.
But if the payment came in on February, okay. then the clock will start ticking on that.
Yes.
So there's a possibility you may need to bootstrap a little bit.
Yeah.
Because the other 2 clients came in later. March and yep. May.
Yeah. So it's a blessing in disguise that the lawyer come in because that dragged 2-3 months out of the whole process.
Right.
Yeah, to give us more time to secure other early adopters.
So eventually you start actual development when?
As soon as we get the money, August 14th we get the money, I think. Yeah, August 13th, 14th we get the money. So probably in the week, because we already know who we are going to go with.
Okay.
So we actually, in that 1 week, we actually kickstart the project.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the development, was there any issues or...
So absolutely, there's a lot of issues. Let's just for comparison for those that do not know development well. So a usual startup will spend 12 months developing their prototype.
Right.
And then probably on the 13th month, they'll say, oh, it's not done yet.
Yep.
Let's extend another 6 to 12 months.
Right.
So they'll go to market probably 18 months or 24 months later. So for us, we have 4 months. So, and we actually deliver on time. Okay. However, having said that, there's a lot of challenges, and we do have to move some requirements later.
I see.
Yeah. So we actually we tell okay, we my deadline to the developer is very clear. I said it need to go out because I don't like to delay. I don't have to set a precedent.
And it's legally binded as well, right? To a certain extent.
Yeah, legally binded definitely, and they can ask for a refund and all these stories.
Yeah.
Even though we do think that they would give a bit of leeway, but we just want to set it right.
Correct.
Yeah? I mean, so. What we do is we actually move some requirements out of the scope that was supposed to be delivered, and we delivered a working MVP first.
But when you move requirements like this, does the client complains?
Not really, because actually the scope is a bit wide. So I think one of the things I learned is probably my MVP is actually a bit too
ambitious.
Too ambitious, yes.
Right.
In fact, some of the things that it be raw is may not even be used until a couple months later, like reporting, a very in-depth of reporting and stuff like that.
So there's one lesson there, which is that you know you got to be very careful with what you promise to deliver. An MVP you did was probably a little bit too much.
Yes.
Would you say how many if you were to redo it again, right? The first MVP that you deliver, how much more can you reduce and you could have delivered something good anyway?
Yeah, probably cut 30% out easily.
30%?
Mm.
Wow. Okay.
Yes.
So after that, eventually, of course, you deliver stage by stage and everything else was delivered.
And another thing is because underestimated the testing needed because we are doing with lead routing. I mean, from upfront is easy. A lead come in, you route it. But the complication is if you route and if the device doesn't receive,
then what happens?
Yeah, we route, wrongly route two times, three times. So a lot of scenarios we need to handle, especially if you're going through internet, there's no guarantee on delivery time. But right. We are talking about every 45 seconds we'll reroute. So it's a bit more complicated than I originally thought it is.
Okay, yeah. Got it. So after you got the, as you develop during the development time, mm-hmm. you were just focusing all on development, or did you do anything between that, or did you started to continue to sell? Or?
We continued to sell, so it was crazy, right? So development is going on, and we are constantly talking to developers on requirements, on screenshots, some UX is still missing, and
okay.
some requirements that originally accepted, and then later on, developers say cannot be done, so we need to revise it, and at the same time, we have to continue selling. So that little voice at that time is more like, on one end, we know that there's some issue that we're facing, but when we are selling, we still have to appear as if
everything is okay.
Like cozy and working, and this is how it would be, and internally, we know that, okay, this is a problem.
So during that time of the development,
yeah.
just until the point that you completed, mm-hmm. during that period of time, right, mm-hmm. How many more clients that you went and meet, actually?
I didn't really count how many leads we meet. I would say easily, probably to secure that three clients altogether, the first three early adopters, I think we have met easily 10 to 15, I'll say, yeah.
Okay, so, but after you secure them, you still continue to meet, right?
Yeah, it's never ending.
Right. And you mentioned secure more than three after that?
Altogether, we have four early adopters at the end before we launch. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and then eventually after launch and deliver the first MVP to the client, I mean, is there any drama besides the moving of requirement?
Of course. So that's when we deliver the first version, right? And
yeah.
bugs come in.
Okay.
It doesn't work on this device or that device, and it works sometimes on whatever circumstance. I mean, a lot of bug fixing. But also the challenge, also at the same time, we need to continue to sell. And
okay.
we are selling, we can't pretend that, I mean, we just have to appear that how it's supposed to be. Like, even though deep down we know there are things crashing and stuff, but we are solving that as we go, but really
right.
it's hard to put into that mindset that at that moment I need to convince someone to buy, but deep inside I know there's a few big bugs happening and things are crashing and people are complaining.
Right. But your early adopters, they would complain also, right?
I mean, even though it's an early adopter, but they pay for it, they expect it to work.
Of course.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with that actually? I would presume that they will be the one that complain the most because they pay you the most and the earliest.
They don't necessarily pay us the most because we give a very good discount.
Okay.
Like, in terms of number of users and for the amount that we charge them. But what I figure to handle this usually, and these are from past experience of handling different clients, especially angry clients, usually it works better when I meet them in person.
Right.
Or at least over the phone instead of text. Text is the worst part. Email and text is like, this guy look like he's gonna kill me if they see me. But when
right.
we meet up, they're more
forgiving.
More empathy, forgiving. And then I also explain to them the challenges we are facing. For example, this is an Android app. We have 20,000 of different fragmented devices, so it's
virtually impossible to cover everything, right?
For us to test every single device.
Correct.
So we try to explain to them the whole development cycle, and let's say some have a special request, as I say, hey, how come it takes 2 months? So we explain to them what happened after the requirement come in. So it's a lot of...
A lot of talking, yeah. So, but there was no major... where a client like so angry that they just want their money back. Is there any of those issues?
No. No, yeah.
Okay. Your clients love you, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think one thing is, I was told by someone else that Malaysian customers are more forgiving.
Oh, okay.
I actually do experience that, because if I try to imagine if I'm in other country,
what would it have been? It could have been different.
Yeah. It could have been worse, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So after all that, you know, delivering the first version, getting the complaints in, and then fixing and continue to sell, like, so what happens continuously after that?
So at the same time, we continue to sell, and at the same time, we're also raising fund on equity crowdfunding. So we actually have development going on, we have selling going on, and we also sell the company in terms of equity, right? So
why equity crowdfunding?
Because personally, I'm always in the lookout for startup investment myself, and I also follow the VC scene, and I start seeing that VC start investing less in terms of a number of companies, but when they invest bigger, so they're looking for proven track record companies to invest in bigger amount. So we are not technically proven per se. The product is not even out, right?
Right.
So, and I figure that the crowd, the public actually do have a good... They do have a good demand for startups to invest in, because they start seeing a lot of startups that was invested probably 2-3 years ago. They start making headlines like Grab and all this, and they say they want a part of startups.
Right.
So I figured that market would give us a better valuation than talking to VCs.
Okay.
But having said that, we did talk to VCs as well.
So before we talk about equity crowdfunding, since you say you talk to VC as well, so at that stage when you talk to VC, what was the feedback?
Common feedback that we got is they like the idea, but they want to see traction. So come back later.
So they want results. They want to see numbers, they want to see money. Alright. That's the common answer. Okay. So for the equity crowdfunding, run us through that, like that whole episode. How did you start it, and
Okay. We went with Pitch In. Pitch In is one of the 6 licensed equity crowdfunding in Malaysia, under scrutiny of the Security Commission. So the whole journey felt like a mini IPO, even though I've not gone through an IPO, but from what I read about it, it does feel like a mini IPO. Before we go live on the Pitch In platform, that means before we go live and people can actually start investing from the website itself and the countdown starts, before that all happened, we actually do about 1 to 2 months of pre-marketing.
Okay.
So that is basically the part that we go on roadshow and start talking to people, and people can start putting money into the trustee account, and from there we gauge the feedback of the crowd.
Right.
Yeah.
And what lessons can you share about that episode?
I think one of the things is the thing I learned from you, Vince, is to keep enhancing the deck. So every single pitch after that, from feedback could be the question asked, because I thought it's clear enough. Like, why are they asking simple question like that?
Exactly.
Then I go into my deck and say, okay, probably they don't come from this angle. So a lot of revision. I think our deck is after the current deck, I think it's at least easily 30, 40 small revisions.
Right. And how many rounds of that 2 months, right? How many people you think you have talked to? I mean roughly, in total. Could be in group or one-to-one, but in total, you think, how many people have you talked to?
I think at least, 500?
300 to 500 people.
Yeah, like potential investor, not just, because not everyone want to invest, right?
Correct.
So it's targeted investors.
Okay, and this is organized by the platform, or you organize yourself, or how?
We do organize ourselves. We do join the platform, and also whatever opportunities we get, we also pitch to our clients, potential clients.
Okay.
Prospects. We basically just pitch everywhere.
So that how long was that? That's 2 months, right? You're saying?
2 months was the 1 to 2 months was the pre-marketing. Then we went live on August 22nd. Then the 45 days countdown started from that. August 22nd.
So in that 60 days, you met 500 people, generally speaking, either one-to-one or one-to-many, right?
Yep.
And I would presume it was a very busy month for you.
Yeah, and development was still going on, right?
And bug fixing was going on, deck presentation had to continue to improve.
Yeah.
And that 2 months is the time that it changes the slide most, right, I would presume.
Yeah.
Okay. And so... So after that pre-marketing, then what happened next? You go live with on the website?
Yeah, we go live. So they feature us on the website. They say that now you can actually start investing. And they have a countdown of 45. We chose to go with 45 days. We can choose 30, 45, 60.
All right.
So we went for 45. And every day we just log in and see what's the latest raise fund.
Okay, so what was the target actually?
We aim for minimum of 750,000 ringgit, maximum of 1.5 million. So translate to about 175,000 US yep. dollar and 350,000 yep. US dollar.
Yep. And the valuation was?
The valuation, so for that 1.5 million ringgit, we are giving out 10% of the equity.
So it's about 15 million valuation.
Valuation, yes.
So did you hit your target?
Yeah, we hit our target. It was oversubscribed, so we actually refund some of them.
So you have to refund some money.
Yeah. We could have taken it all in, but we figured
it was sufficient for now. Yeah. So you took exactly 1.5 something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Okay. That's good. And you had to wait for all the 45 days or it was completed much earlier?
We waited for 45 days. In fact, at one point, I was thinking of just closing at 1.25. But my partner, he's really persistent. So the last investor was actually from a post-back client.
Okay.
So he spent 3 hours talking to this law firm, and at the end, the partners invested 250,000 and closed it at 1.5.
Ah, okay. And that was on a very
2-3 days before closing.
Two, three days before closing. All right. Wow, that's persistent.
Yeah.
Okay. So after that close, then the money will get into the company's account, and then you can start using it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you start issuing shares and stuff like that. Am I right?
Yeah.
So looking back at the equity crowdfunding that you did. Do you think it was the right move? How would you have done it differently for in terms of the funding part?
I think I'll do the same thing. Even though we do get along the way, we do get feedback from potential investor, friends, family on what are the other better way to do it. But generally, I think we did a good decision, and I would have done it the same again. Yeah.
Okay. So after the fundraise, I mean, what happens next?
Yeah, so right now, we already have the money in. We are issuing all the share and stuff. So basically right now is the hiring, expanding the team.
Right.
And also, of course, continue to sell the products.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And how long has it been since you raised that 1.5 million?
The money was in about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, okay. Fresh from the oven.
Yeah.
All right. And so looking back at this entire journey, so let's review this, right? Mm-hmm. From idea to pre-selling, getting the money in 4 months ahead of time,
mm-hmm.
and then develop it and then sell it, and then after that raise through ECF.
Mm-hmm.
What would be some of the top lessons that you would love to share with people, like, you know, whether it's good or bad or mistakes or really good stuff, like, what will it be?
Okay, so some of the lesson is because I'm trying out a lot of new things in this whole journey. I mean, I've been running all these different businesses, and I figure that what triggered the whole ECF, right? Like, for example, we could have bootstrapped it further. So what triggered the whole ECF or the getting the capital in is I've been running 15 years on operating cash flow on retained earnings on P&L,
right.
And that is slow,
right?
And I'm like, I am a hardworking entrepreneur, at least that's how I see myself,
right?
And there are rich people out there that want to
invest in
people like me, so why wouldn't I want their money? Why do I work so hard to put my own money, hard earned money, into this venture and grow so slow,
right?
So that was one of the things that I learned and decided to try it out in Sales Candy, and well, it worked out. So the other thing probably is I've been trying to do things very unconventionally. So for example, selling before building, we actually incorporate the company after we get the first sales. And even the domain, I start talking to the domain was taken, salescandy.com, so I contact the seller, get a price, and I told him I will make a decision in 2 months. Because I don't know whether I can sell a product or not. So if I don't, what's the point of having the domain?
Right.
Yeah, so actually I do things very, very opposite of how the natural flow is. And I think probably that is where all the fun is. Yeah.
So you don't even incorporate the company first. You, after the first sale,
after the first verbal go ahead, we incorporate.
Then only you incorporate.
That was 2 months after the ideas was.
Right. So if they were to say yes and pay tomorrow, you can't even bank in the check yet.
No, I can't.
Okay. Besides that, any other interesting stuff that happened that people may not know?
Because
a lot of people always see from the outside that, wow, Sales Candy is so successful, but any behind the scene that you could share?
I think
Okay, I think, yeah, probably some of the things is developing a software. It may look easy from outside. If you look at the function, it's like, oh, these are easy, like you got done in days. But what behind the scene is there's a lot of hard work in thinking through the process of the interface.
Right.
Especially if you have a sophisticated problem. And solving a sophisticated problem is not hard. Basically, let's say, for example, to cater for this problem, you put 10 buttons in, there's an easy solution.
Correct.
But it's not a simple one. Simple one is to end it up with just one button.
Correct.
So I think these are things that most people do not see from the outside. They only see the end product. But we spend a lot of time in things like this. Probably some of the mistake that we have made is we didn't engage a professional tester earlier. So we kind of like, okay, I think we can test it. How complicated can it be? Yeah, but it could be very complicated. So some of the bugs that we found could have been prevented with a better testers. So this is something that I learned along the way and probably part and parcel of if you want to start a tech startup, things to consider, a tester, the whole within budget for a tester. We tell the developer, don't worry, don't code on this, we'll do a testing. And we did, and there's a lot of crazy nights doing testing.
Okay.
Weekends, crazy nights.
You know, you come from a little bit more technical background than average people, right? Yep. So let me put you on a spot where if someone wants to do this and he doesn't have a technical background, right? Mm. I'm pretty sure he will see even lesser things and issues initially. So what would have been your advice to people like this?
Very tough, actually. To be honest, especially after Sales Candy, a lot of people from that I know that approach me and say, hey, can we like brainstorm some idea? And I say, sure, let's brainstorm the idea. Then even we have the idea, like, so what's next? Who is going to take it to the next steps? Who's going to come up with the technical requirements and all this? Of course, you could have hired someone, but first you need to know who to hire. And then even if you hire a very technical person, they may not be a good person to put requirements from how to use it to a technical requirements. So I think that is all different skill.
That together. Means the problem of the technical guys would develop the 10 button.
Exactly.
Yeah. But they may not know how to turn the 10 button into one button.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And how did you do that 10 button to one button in your process, actually? How did you do it?
It may
not be a clear process, but generally, right. What did you all do multiple night or weeks?
That's a tough question. Yeah, I don't really have a methodology for it. But usually what happened is, first I identify the problems. So usually that is by talking to clients, right? So they say, hey, it would be nice if you have a document control between these two parties, things like that. I say, then
right.
The idea sparks, right? So the next thing is, usually the next thing that happened after that is I first try to generalize the problem enough to make it big enough for me to solve it and make money out of it. Because if I just solve it for one client, basically I can't make money, right?
Correct.
So the next thing after that is to usually I come up with some, either I have a solution upfront, a default solution I'll call it, then I let it sit with me for a while.
Okay.
And usually I would know when I have a simple and clear solution. It just like the light bulb will just turn on and say, yeah, this is a solution. And before that, usually I just keep thinking on it, I just keep sitting on it.
Right. Yeah. Do you discuss this with the team or do you all use any tools or sketches or do you all just talk to people? Or it just all happens in your head?
No, it happens a lot in my head. There's a big board meeting going on in there already on its own. So after that, I usually still discuss with the team because I'm not the only one using the app.
Right.
So I need to get feedback. I need to tell them what I want to achieve. What are some of the challenges I see? What are the things I like to probably in future to integrate? And then what do they think? So I usually try to get feedback on that, definitely. And definitely we come up with mock-ups on how it should look like. But sometimes, of course, after that, we still change it. And of course, it give a better visuals, especially for those that can't imagine or visualize flows.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So can I say that probably... continuous feedback, discussion, even talk to your prospect and your client is a very helpful process.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And from the sound of it also, the whole entire journey, I keep hearing about communication with the clients and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So can I say that the end product turn out quite significantly different from your first how you envision it in terms of your design and stuff, or it was quite spot on?
For us, it was quite spot on, even though, of course, there are some feature change here and there. Some feature could not be implemented. But other than that, the flow, I think we kind of got it right upfront in terms of what are important. Even sometimes we get challenged by clients, and they, for example, we do the routing round robin. We don't route all at once. There are clients that say, why don't you route all at once? So, but that is an intentional decision upfront. So things like this, I think we got it right. And why do we think we got it right? Because the more we talk to them and defend the position, it was clear. Because let's use the same example, right? So if you route to all, the challenge that we face is, that challenge that we will face would be, you route together, synchronously to 20 salesperson. The psychology behind it is, the 19 other salesperson will pick it up. Why me?
All right. Okay?
And if at the end nobody pick up the leads, the sales manager, how would he or she discipline the sales team? He or she will call the 20 in and say, hey, how come you guys didn't pick it up? 10 minutes later, nobody actually get, I mean, okay, so you sit in for 10 minutes, get bashed by the sales manager, but same with the rest of the 19 salesperson, so there's no big deal. If I do round robin, I know exactly who is the culprit.
Right.
Everyone is averagely answering 7 out of 10 leads that routed to them. You answer 1. Alright? Let's talk. So it is 1-to-1 and it should get solved.
True.
Yeah.
So after the implementation of Sales Candy to your clients, right? What are the improvements that the client, I mean, what was the feedback or the statistics looks like?
So right now we are tabulating all the data, but some of the immediate feedback we saw is there's a property developers. We saw they actually received booking from a lead coming to receiving a booking in 9 days. And that's amazing. Because what happened is, on average, property developers will call their leads 1 to 2 weeks after the lead come in. And for these 9 days, we actually track every single point. The leads come in from Facebook lead ads. It was called on the 26th minute after it came in. They came into the showroom and the deposit was made on the 9th. And in fact, this was the first close, and the client actually congratulated us and said, oh, there's one close on Sales Candy. So
okay.
We know that we are doing something right, because they sound very excited when they saw this. And these clients particularly is she's a GM for big property developers, and she has seen enough system in the market, enough flows in the market, and if she get excited, I think
there must be something there, right? Do you have statistics like what's the average time it takes for people to call the leads so far in your system?
Okay, to be very frank, now we do have the data, but why are we not tabulating the data is because we still see some inconsistency in tracking here and there, so we are actually fixing a lot of bugs.
Right.
But individually, we do see a lot of calls answered within first minute or first 5 minutes, and okay. Those are all track.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. So if somebody wants to use Sales Candy, they can just go on to your website and is there a way to test it at the moment or not yet?
Not at the moment. Right now, we are doing we call it a corporate sales. So basically, we would go. Talk to the clients
on a one-to-one basis.
On a one-to-one basis, then when they subscribe, we'll activate the account for them, and then they will add all the salesperson phone numbers, and then they could use the salesperson phone number to register for the
Yeah. All right. But anyway, to everyone who is listening to this audio, if any one of you who is interested to explore Sales Candy for your company and things like that, I will get hold of Stanley's email or some way of contacting Stanley, so that you know you guys could find a way to get in touch with him to make use of Sales Candy one way or another in future, right? We are coming towards the end. I would say, Stanley, what would be some of your entrepreneurial life lesson that it could be one or it could be three, but take it away, what would you like to share?
I think, I do have quite a few to share, but let's say just near it to one. I would say to stretch. Yeah, because why is this important to me? Because I see myself grow over the last few years, especially attending a personal development course and things like that. And I see that for the past 10 over years, how I run is very fixated on a certain image that I have about myself.
Right.
So after some courses that I attended, I start stretching myself. And especially when the little boy say, hey, don't get on the stage, stupid. I mean, it's 200 people out there and you don't know what you're talking about and you're going to look like an idiot. So don't get on the stage. So that is when, and now I'm aware of all this little voice. It's still going on, I mean.
Right.
But then when I catch the voice, I'm like, okay, so this is the time that I should just...
do the opposite.
Do the opposite. Let's go on the stage and see what would happen.
Right.
So I practice a lot of that right now. So I think nowadays, even Vincent, when they call me and say, let's do something, I say, okay, let's do it. I mean, deep inside, I know, shit, I don't have to do this. But just maybe for the sake of just proving the little voice that, well, okay, so what? All right, you say don't do it. I'm going to do it. So what?
So all this little voice that tells you don't do and you went and do it, did it get you into very big trouble so far? Or actually, so far, so good?
I think the more I do it, the more the voice...
goes away.
It goes away, yeah. Of course, it'll come back with some different things. But then, I think so far, it not got me into big troubles. In fact, it opened a lot of opportunities for me. And I think now when I see a challenge, usually my first reaction is to... actually smile or smirk. I'm like, okay, this is gonna be fun.
All right,
it's gonna be okay. It's gonna be fun in the sense that it's gonna be scary. I'm going to I'm gonna be anxious about it. But I mean, I think of it as a roller coaster, right? So
okay.
I know that something fun is gonna happen.
All right. Yeah. Okay, that's good. Well, I mean, I think that's part and parcel of entrepreneurship, which is to stretch your limit. And. And after all, entrepreneurs are really a rare breed of people. And sometimes, seriously, being an entrepreneur, we also ask ourselves what the heck we got ourselves into, right? I would say it's about doing almost the opposite of what almost everyone else does. Because that's the out of the world population, probably only 5% is entrepreneurs and the other 5% are not. And obviously, if you want to get the result of the 5%, you cannot do what the other 95% of people are doing, which generally means that most of the time you got to do the opposite of what everybody else does to get the results that you want, right?
Exactly.
So with that said, thank you very much, Stanley, for sharing your time with us.
You're welcome.
And we are looking forward to take Sales Candy for a ride, hopefully one of these days. But again, to the listener, I'll try to find a way to help you out to get access to it once it's ready for mainstream. Or if some of you want to take Sales Candy to your country and grow it together with Stanley, I mean, you know how to get in touch with me and I'll find a way to help you to hook up with Stanley as well, because I think there's a huge opportunity for Sales Candy in a lot of countries, and I think a lot of people need it as well. And I would say for me, Stanley's Sales Candy is one of the best case study for, you know, the art of imperfection. You know, start selling with just a presentation deck and get a couple of hundred thousand, and then after that start developing, and then after that go and do a equity crowdfunding and get 15 million in terms of valuation. So I think this is really 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 awesome. And for any one of you who have any question at all, what I would suggest to do is that I will post it up in Facebook, this recording, and you may type in all your questions. I will get Stanley to answer that on another day, because we got to run for now. So maybe you want to re-listen to this again and then look at search online for Sales Candy's information as well. And if you got any question, you can put it into the Facebook private mentoring group under the Sales Candy post, which I'm going to post by end of today. Then I'll make sure that Stanley will answer to those questions as well. All right. So with that, thank you very much. Thanks again, Stanley.
Welcome, Vince.
All right. Have a nice day, everybody. Catch up soon. Bye.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
How's it?
Good. Done. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, was fun. More fun than.
You were a little nervous, is it?
Sorry.
You were a little nervous.
I'm an introvert.